Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode 36 of Cloud Control. And welcome back, Kate. We're here. It's been a little while, but we're back here to do some podcasting. Good to see you on the show. Of course, I've seen you since, but you know.
We haven't seen each other in months. We haven't talked.
I mean, I did move.
You did move. That's true. But yeah, I mean, it's great to be back. We did have a little bit of a break. You know, life is busy. You know, things go in. You know, I don't know. The point is,
no need to make excuses. We're off to a flying start here.
We're a little rusty. It's been a little while, but we're excited to be back. We've come back on like what I think is always the best episode, or at least my favorite episode to do every year. So it's like extra exciting.
Isn't it just kidding.
Like, oh, I played Animal Crossing. Let's talk about it. Like, no. This is going to be fun.
Oh my God. I know. We picked a great episode to shake off the rust, to come back and just do basically our favorite episode or one of them, and talk about all our favorite games. And you know, why not start off with a bang? So let's do it that way. So this is the 36th episode. It is our 2023 Game of the Year episode. Of course, this is usually something we do at the end of the year, kind of our final episode of the year. But because we were not really recording at the time, we're doing it now. So that's a nice, lovely delayed present for everyone out there in podcast land in February here. So just before we get into that, I guess there's a few things we should address at the start, because we are sort of soft restarting the show here with this episode. So this is our return. We're going to be coming back every Tuesday, returning to a once every 2 week format instead of the every week we were doing before. The show again is going to be audio only as well now. So we're still available on YouTube and all the podcast services, but we're just returning to audio. I think it's kind of our wheelhouse, and we're able to just make the product we want to make and have the conversations we want to have. And, you know, I think that's the best way for us to do it right now. So that's sort of what we're going for. Listener mail is now its very own segment rather than a daily, every episode thing. So, won't be answering your questions every episode, but every once in a while, we're going to pull out the listener mailbag and do a whole segment of those all at once, which will be something I think we're both really looking forward to. Of course, if you want to write in for the show, you can write your emails always to cloudcontrolpod@proton.me. And that email is in the show notes as well for your very convenient fingers to reach down to and send us an email right now if you want to be part of that next mailbag.
Yeah, the email that's coming in right now is like, please don't say very convenient fingers ever again.
Wow, yeah, that was quotable. That was good. Is there anything I missed there, Kate? That was a lot of news for our listeners, but I think they're smart enough. They'll probably understand what I had to say
there. I think, you know, we got a little bit of leeway with this one. I think next episode we're going to have to be like absolute perfection, but I think we got everything. So
good.
Yeah, we're gonna do our Game of the Year episode this episode, which I guess I could briefly go over the rules in case you know, it's a year goes by. That's a long time. It's easy to forget. So
please do. I forgot too, so you gotta remind me.
Okay, well, I hope you remembered enough to pick correct, accurate picks for each category. Otherwise, you're going to be put on the spot. But basically, we've got a list of categories here. And unlike a traditional Game of the Year awards and nominees, we are not picking games that necessarily came out in 2023, but games that we played in 2023. It's just a little more interesting, you know, like it's hard to keep up with everything that is current. And also, like, it's just a good excuse to talk about the things, like kind of almost like recap our year, talk about what we've played, because just because a game's a few years old doesn't mean it wasn't super exciting for one of us in 2023. And I guess the only other kind of stipulation is it's got to be, I think, like something you played a significant amount in 2023.
Enough that you talk about it on the show, right? Like,
I think that's kind of the qualifier. It's not going to be like, oh, yeah, exactly. It's not going to be like, oh, I played one, you know, game of, I went back to, you know, a game and played a day of it.
Oh, I can't wait to see what the example you were going to pull out was. I was on the edge of my seat.
Well, it's like Slay the Spire, I guess, okay, for example, okay. Right? Like, I have like 200 hours in Slay the Spire, and then like I did one night of like, oh, I downloaded a couple mods and played for like,
damn, is she going for Zoom Beanies? Or like, where is she reaching into her bag for there?
Well, I didn't want to say Zoom Beanies because what if that comes up later?
Oh my God. Kate's best co-op game, 2023 Zoom Beanies. Whoops, I spoiled one of the categories. That's awesome. Okay.
Well, before we spoil anything else, should we get started?
Yeah, let's get started. How many categories do we have, Kate? I think it's 11, right? Because we are like to be unique and have an odd number. I think 10 is usually pretty standard.
I think 11 is correct. It's 10 categories and then the final 11th right. game of the year pick. Oh, and the other rule, I guess, is that you could only nominate a game for one category. Because sometimes, and by sometimes I mean every single year, the Game of the Year award winner just picks up like 13 other awards on their way down the aisle to collect their Game of the Year, which is fair. They deserve it, but also it's just for
less room for conversation, right? More... Less room for conversation.
Exactly.
All right. Well, speaking of conversation, let's get started with our first category, which is the most surprising.
Yes. Yeah, so this is for a game that was either far better, far worse, or far stranger than your initial expectations.
Okay. You can go first for this one if you'd like. Go ahead.
Okay. So this one is kind of a weird pick for me because I don't think it's surprising that it was good, but I think it is surprising that I enjoyed it so much. And this is Armored Core, Fires of Rubicon.
Okay.
And I knew I had to play it because it's the FromSoft game that came out in 2023. But like, I could not care less about mech games. I couldn't be bothered for any other mech game that's ever existed.
It's one of those two things for you. It's like FromSoft versus mechs on each side. It was like, one's your favorite, one you don't. And it's like, which is going to win?
Yeah, it was like an unstoppable force beating like an immovable object. And like, I bought the game. I played it like day one. Like, I felt like I owed it to From Software. And I really enjoyed Armored Core. Like, I didn't just play it. Like, I started it for that reason, but I definitely stayed with it and played it. And it wasn't just, like, the pedigree of the company behind it. Like, I had such a good time. I don't think I'm going to play other mech games, but I do think that the next Armored Core that comes out, I genuinely will buy it and play it because I had such a fun time stepping outside of my wheelhouse to play something, like, very different. So...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. I'm really glad to hear. I feel like I never talked to you about your final kind of like feeling on that game, probably because we weren't podcasting at the time. So it's like we never really had that chat, but I'm glad to hear you liked it that much. That's cool. It's something I hope I can play maybe this year. Who knows? There's never enough time.
You should definitely play it because I think you're a little more interested in a mech-based game than I am. And it's a FromSoft game in some ways, but it's like nowhere comparable to playing something like Dark Souls. Like, you don't have to be a From Software fan to like this. You just have to be at least willing to try a mech game.
Sure. Well, I'm more into FromSoft than you are mechs, so maybe the scale will balance in my favor there. Who knows? It's interesting the way you qualified your most surprising game as something that you would never usually play, but something that you got really into, because that is exactly how I took this for myself as well. And my most surprising game of 2023 is Street Fighter VI, which I absolutely loved playing. I mean, I've still continued to play it a little bit into 2024 as well, but it was just one of those, I had a couple friends that picked it up and we got into kind of playing with one another. And I mean, having those modern controls is really what changed it for me. You know, like those traditional kind of like fighting game inputs and like the way you have to be so meticulous and perfect. And it's just never been the thing. We've talked about it so much on the show. I'm not going to get into like the frustrations there, but the modern controls really made it so much more approachable. And to the point where like you learn the basics pretty easily if you're familiar with fighting games at all, which of course, like, you know, we've played enough games where we can know the basics and that's all you really need. And it's just made the game such an easy entry point to where like now I'm actually picking up the odd like real control, I guess, if you want to call it, here and there, and adding it into my toolkit because I can mix it in with stuff I'm already familiar with instead of trying to learn those moves while I'm getting my teeth kicked in by someone that could do it on command, right? So it's been really great. And I mean, there's lots of other modes in the game too, so I've kind of fooled around with some of the single player stuff, but it's just been a great social hub for me. And you know, we talk about style a lot with some of our favorite games like the Persona series and all this, and this game has a lot of style too, with like the kind of streetwear and graffiti and spray paint and neon colors, and it's very colorful. The characters all have a lot of personality, very vibrant. It's been a great time. I've really enjoyed Street Fighter VI.
That's fantastic. I completely agree with everything you say. Like, it is like you said, like, it's just so accessible. You don't have to sit in training mode. Like, you can just pick up and play with friends. And then like, you do still learn, which is the best part. It's made like the learning process of getting to that stage where you can like, you know, play it adequately, like however it's like in the intentional way, but like without all the frustration of like, you know, you can you can learn while playing instead of learn to play. But I have to ask before we move on to the next category, who's your favorite character?
You know what? Okay, so my favorite character right now is Aki, the new, I think she's a DLC character. I really like her. She reminds me of Valdo, but she poisons people. And, you know, I love that damage over time business. But the other character I think is probably my best is Zangief. I just love Zangief.
That is a fair pick. He is super cool.
He's so fun. I'm just the grabbing people, you know, I just choke slam them into the ground. I pile drive them into the ground. Like they just go into the ground and it's really fun to slam them over and over. So
that is fair. It doesn't matter how many times this little tiny person has like, you know, chopped your ankles. If you get them and you like pile drive them into the ground, you win.
That's right. That's my strategy. But anyways, let's move on to category number two, which is the best co-op.
Yeah, so this is the best jolly cooperation, either couch or online. And I'm interested now to hear what you're going to say, because you've given up your Street Fighter freebie.
Well, Street Fighter's not co-op, you know? It's not a co-op game.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. It is actually the opposite.
Anyway, I mean, I don't know if you put the same as me, but I put Gears of War as my favorite co-op game from last year. Are you the same?
I did put Gears of War. I wanted to give a shout out to Pico Park, which it's horrible. It's this like horrible flash game where like you have to do these like really insanely difficult levels, but like the controls are bad. Sometimes all players have to control the same character, and like if you're not all pushing the button, like jump at the same time, you don't jump.
Oh my god, that sounds like a nightmare. It sounds like it's one of those streamer rage bait kind of games where like people are supposed to get mad intentionally.
It kind of is, but it's genuinely like you can only play it like co-op, and it's really funny because it's like, who didn't press jump? And like everyone's on the couch like, I swear I did. But so I want to shout out that. But like, yeah, realistically, like Gears of War is the correct choice.
Sure. I mean, for my shout out too, I would say Fortnite obviously is just such a co-op fun time for me and my friends. But I mean, it's boring to just have that kind of thing. But yeah, Gears of War, let's talk about it. We played this together. We've actually played the first two Gears of Wars together. But this is just number one, because I think we beat the second one this year in 2024.
That is correct. So spoilers for next year.
That's right. But Gears of War 2006, the original one, we played it on Xbox. And it's just unbelievable to me for a game that you would stereotypically, based on like what you know it to be, you would think it doesn't hold up well at all. It's like dated and it is dated in certain ways, but it's still such a blast to play even today on the couch, like revving your chainsaw and like the funny lines they call it to each other, like shit yeah, and like you know, they're just so, there's like so masculine, quote unquote, to the point where it's hilarious. And you know,
like it genuinely feels like playing a parody game. Like it was, I think it was somewhat self-aware, but I don't think it was like intended to be a parody, but like everything's so like horribly gritty, and like brown and gray are the only two colors in the entire game. And it's like hyper masculine. Like there's like no female characters. And then if it is, it's like, we have to save them. Or it's like one person has a wife. Like there's,
yeah.
There's,
and she's only there like, to motivate him to do his tasks as a sergeant.
Yeah. And then the second her like story is resolved, like she's found, then like they literally never mention her a single time afterwards. It's like supposed to be your whole character's motivation for going on these missions. And like, it is just so absurd. Like it, like they're just swearing and like shit yeah has got to be like the best affirmation I use in my real life now. It's like, oh, you want to play some Fortnite? Shit yeah
I do.
But like, it's at the same time, it's so fun. Like the actual like co-op aspects are really cool, because like oftentimes you have to split up and you're like one person's covering the other person, or there's like maybe a light puzzle that you have to do together, and like you're going kind of on different walkways and you could see the other person, and then like you kind of converge in the middle with your chainsaws and both like chainsaw the same guy in half. And like I'm surprised that it isn't just like, okay, you're both here and enemies have a little bit more health, because that is how even I think a lot of co-op games handle that like multiplayer campaign, even like right now. let alone like a game in 2006 coming out with actually some clever uses, like of making a campaign be a co-op option.
Yeah, totally. And it just, you know, I think the mechanics of what you're doing while you're in those spaces together, it makes it just that extra layer of fun too, because you have the active reload, which is also really cool to go back to and see like where that sort of mechanic started. But it's fun because sometimes, you know, you'll mess it up and you'll say, oh my God, I jammed my gun. Like I can't cover you for a second or something like that. And it's just those little extra touches of like things you're in control of the game, which, or, you know, oh, I dropped my Lancer. Like I don't have a chainsaw anymore. I can't defend close up. Or, you know, I'm trying to spin this wheel and someone's biting me in the legs. Like you got to shoot them so I can continue. You know, that. The wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think ammo is shared too. So there's a lot of like, okay, there's an ammo box. Like who's going to pick it up this time? Or like there's one sniper, who gets it? And like, you know, there's one like turret that someone can sit on in this section. Like who's going to do that? And then like, or there's the boss where you have to like shoot the eye and then throw a grenade in its mouth. And like, okay, I'm on eye shooting because I suck at grenades. And like, the grenade and then
And there's also the co-op, like the vehicle driving, like, you know, where there's like I'm driving the vehicle and you're on the turret in the back, and I love those those little scenarios where you each have a split role that the game just gives you and you have no choice but to just take it on, you know, like it almost in what's the game where you're escaping from the prison and one person's driving the truck and the other person's machine gunning at the like back.
We were here.
Like, A Way Out.
Yeah.
You know, there's just those scenarios you get into like that. And it's fun because it's kind of unexpected. It's not like you get to make a choice of, okay, well, I'm better at the gun, so I'm going to take it. Like, no, you just have to do the one you get.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like, I think part of it is the game is maybe better because we had low expectations going into it. But I think there is also an element of it, like it actually holds up pretty well. And like, it doesn't feel too bad to play. Like the guns feel pretty decent. Like, especially the sniper I really liked. Actually, like it feels good to line up a headshot. The only complaint I have with the entire game is that the running is horrible. Whenever you run, the screen shakes so much. It's like, I have to close, like I will throw up if I watch the running too long. It's horrible. So I gotta just roll everywhere because that's at least a little faster than walking, but something within my like physical capacity to do.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, the last thing I'll say is definitely like after playing Gears of War 2, it was clear, you know, how much it improved even upon the first one. So I think the first one, for as much as fun as we had, it still was, you know, old enough. But I think for you take it, I said this at the time, I think for a game, like I think it's the original Gears of War holds up infinitely better than the original Uncharted, for sure, because the climbing is so slow. You know, I'm not going to get into Uncharted, but I think it's way better. I don't know. Anyways, co-op game. That's a great game. Play Gears of War, everybody. It's great. There's nothing else to play exclusive on Xbox anyway, so Gears of War is the...
Yeah, we got to play the game back from 2006. But hey, it's still worth it.
All right. Well, we can look forward to the future next, Kate. Our next category, most anticipated.
Yeah. For the category description for this one, I just put down soon. So hopefully we can play this game soon. I put down, so in June 2024, that's only a few months away. Do you know what's coming out in June 2024, James?
I don't know. Bloodborne cart? Who knows?
you messed up my joke window. Super Monkey Ball Banana Rumble.
Oh my God. That's the new one, right? Just announced?
That's the new one. Super Monkey Ball's coming out. But unfortunately, I won't be playing it because Shadows of the Erdtree, the Elden Ring expansion, is coming out on June 21st. And obviously, that is like by far the thing I'm most excited for. But I don't know if the DLC counts. So no, Well, I prepared two other honorable mentions because I really don't need to say anything about Shadows of the Erdtree. Like, it's the Elden Ring DLC. That speaks for itself. So I want to shout out that the Another Crab's Treasure is coming out, I think, in April. And I'm really excited for this game. It's kind of like a parody Souls game where you're like a little hermit crab and you put on different shells. They give you different abilities. And it looks like this colorful, bright, like cute, hilarious, like ridiculous concept for like a tough as nails action game where you're like cute little crab. And then the other one, I think that's supposed to come out this year, is The Plucky Squire, which I know we're both very excited about. We've talked about before, where it's that amazing, like, kind of almost like Paper Mario-esque sort of game. And then you're in, like, in the book, and then suddenly the book opens up and you're in this massive 3D space. And it just looks like such an incredibly cool indie game coming out later this year. And just like one of those almost like Nintendo style games where you're just constantly playing different mini games and you have this like bright, colorful world to explore. And it just looks like, like, such an incredibly fun thing to sit and play.
I was going to say, Plucky Squire looks like the most Nintendo game that's not actually made by Nintendo, is the way that I would describe it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. And it's like the hugest compliment you could give it. Yeah. It just looks like it's got that perfect Nintendo polish and, like, something about that, like, quintessential Nintendo charm that, like, I don't really know how to explain it, and I don't really know how you reproduce it, but, like, everybody knows that, like, when you're playing, like, you know, when you get your first, like, creature with Cappy in Mario, or, like, you know, some of the, just that's mm-hmm. beautiful, lovely, like, comforting Nintendo feel to it.
Totally. Yeah, The Plucky Squire was on my list as well for most anticipated. My other one that I put, because, well, I got ripped off on this category because of our recording times, because obviously I was going to put Persona 3, which came out P3 Reload earlier in February. And even Final Fantasy VII Rebirth came out today as we record this on February 29th. So I can't even say that. I originally had that as my number one answer, but, you know, obviously it sounds like cheating now, so can't do it.
You can't say it anymore now.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, you haven't played it yet. It's out.
Yeah, I feel like that breaks my personal rule of games can't be released yet, you know. But the other one I'll shout out, though, because we talked about Plucky Squirrel already, is, and I think this might be a bit cheating because it's coming to early access, but because my other two games got stolen from me, I don't feel bad about cheating. It's Hades 2 coming to early access this year. You know, the first game was just so finely tuned and had such strong mechanics. I'm so interested to see how they're going to tweak that and still let it maintain the feeling of what made the first game so great. You know, like, what kind of new weapons and powers will you be getting? Who are the new characters going to be as well? Because part of what made Hades so great was that cast that you got to go back and talk to in between your missions or even during the run. So just seeing how they build upon that world, I think, is something that's interesting, and also interesting in the fact that it's roguelike. And I don't know if I've ever been looking forward to how they build on characters in a roguelike before, but
yeah, roguelikes don't often get sequels, and when they do, they're usually quite different. But I get the impression, yeah, Hades 2 is going to kind of be more of the same, but, like, with some new twists. And I think it's really cool too, like, Supergiant is so known for making such vastly different games with every thing they put out, right? Like, you have, like, compare Transistor to something like Hades versus that, like, basketball game. I'm blanking on the name.
It's not Bastion. I know the one you're talking about.
Bastion was the first one, but man, that even that game was good. I really enjoyed that too. And so they're definitely a studio that I feel like really makes something that they feel they have a vision for. And obviously, there was so much that they felt like they still had that they could make within that world of Hades that justified making a Hades 2. So that almost makes me more excited for it, given the, like, history of Supergiant. And, like, man, like, all their games are just, like, smash 10 out of 10s. And, like, Hades is probably my favorite out of all of them. So if they were going to make a sequel to any game, it's like, oh, Hades 2. I agree. I'm so incredibly excited. I considered putting that, but the only reason I didn't was because I'm still debating if I'm going to play the early access or not.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to, but I, you know, I need an answer.
Yeah, because it's like, on one hand, it's Hades 2 and I get to play it, and that's so exciting. But on the other hand, I almost feel like I'm kind of making, like, the final version of the game less exciting. And
it depends how much you're going to play it. You could just continue to play it and just have played more earlier. Or you can, you know,
I guess that's true. But like, I don't know if things are different.
Well, for me, I probably won't, because it's going to be on PC for early access, and I'll be playing it on something else probably. But anyway, let's talk about our best comfort food game from 2023.
Yeah, so this is the perfect game to curl up and relax with. And I want you to go first, because I feel like we might have put the same thing.
All right, well, I mean, it's Marvel Snap, isn't it? Like, it's the greatest game in the world. I think I gave this an award for something else on a different show, but I honestly don't remember. So I want to talk about Marvel Snap, because this game has to be championed because it's a mobile game and people are going to probably write it off because it's a mobile game. You know what I mean? And Marvel Snap is so good, everybody. Like, it is one of those games where, yes, of course, it's got the paid content and stuff, but a lot of games do. This game you can play completely for free if you're worried about that being a barrier, and you honestly do not feel like you're missing out. Yes, you unlock things a little slower, but you can unlock anything you want. The game doesn't also, like, one of the biggest problems with the game, like, Hearthstone, is that, like, the intro cards, you always feel like they completely suck versus the stuff other people have. But in Marvel Snap, maybe not the very, very base cards, but once you unlock a few different things, I just feel like you can really play with anything. And, you know, it's just so cool to go in there and see all the variety of the art they have. Like, they have all the different comic artists coming in and making variants of these cards that you can check out. And even if you don't own the cards, just seeing them as other people play them and looking in the store and, like, appreciating that comic style art is something that I just love. Like, I don't read a lot of comics, but every time you see that style of art, just every time I play that game, I'm like, man, I should start reading some comics because, like, this Black Knight card looks so damn cool. And I want to see, you know, what his comic art looks like and go through the book. Like, it's making me think that way. And I think that's such a valuable, what am I trying to say? That means a lot to me considering it's Marvel. And I've recently become, like, you know, I've really hit the fatigue with the MCU and, like, that end of the Marvel stuff. And so the way that Snap makes me feel interested in that universe in a totally different way, I think, is a huge compliment. But, and part of the reason it's a comfort food game, but it's just one of those things that's part of my daily routine now. Like, I do my little quests, I unlock my cards. It's so fun, everybody. You got to play Marvel Snap.
It really is. I think Marvel Snap is, like, one of the games that I talk to most with my friends, because, like, it's just, it's so accessible, right? Like, a lot of people play it, and, like, I play, like, I mean, there's never really been another game in my life where I'm like, I should do the daily quest, like, I should play every day, like, and it's not that I feel compelled to have to do it with Snap, but it's like a good game, and I don't think it needs the daily stuff to, like, keep you engaged to play, because I think it's fun enough that just playing for the sake of playing.
Usually those type of quests turn me off from playing something.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, I know we're on the same page with that too, which is why this is such a breakthrough for both of us.
Yeah, it stresses me out, but I think it's like what you said, like, there's no feel that you need to engage with, like, the monetization side of it, or the like, you know, things that are intended to keep you playing, like a daily quest, because it's just fun. And also, like, I feel like you unlock things at a good pace. Like, I get a new card. I have this weird new routine where I play when I get ready for bed. So I'll play, like, a match or two at night when I'm, like, brushing my teeth and, like, doing that. That's just part of the routine. If I don't play at any other time during the day, which I don't always do, but I always play at least a match or two while I'm getting ready for bed. And, like, it's exciting. I unlock cards all the time. Like, we always send each other, like, look at this cool new art I got. Like, I just bought a Crossbones who looks so funny.
Scooby-Doo villain Crossbones.
He's just kind of dorky looking, and I sent it to you. And then James replied, he's like, he looks like a Scooby-Doo villain. And he does.
Like, they're going to tear his mask off at any time, and it's like, oh, it's Joe or whoever.
It's exactly what he looks like. And, like, you know, with some other friends, it's like, oh, someone else, like, I got this new cool art, like, or I just got this out of, like, a chest or something. And, like, I don't know, it's just something that, like, people keep up with. And there's this, like, kind of social aspect to it as well, where it's like, yeah, because there's so much care put into, like, the art looks so cool, or, like, oh, this new character just came out and I just got them, or, like, oh, I just put them in my deck, and, like, whatever. So, like, it's just a great game. I think that's fair. It's a good choice.
I'm surprised it's not yours. That's one of the two. That and Gears, I thought we were going to have the same answer for. But,
well, I had another really good pick for comfort food games, and you'll appreciate it still, is that I put Cassette Beast down.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay.
Yes, because I beat the game. I think you'd already maybe beaten it, but I beat it in early 2023.
Yes.
And it's such a fantastic game. It was one of my, like, big first Game Pass games I played, and it is essentially, it's Pokemon, but the monsters are really interesting. They've got great designs. They come out of cassettes, like on tapes instead of in balls, and so there's kind of like this music theme to it, I guess. But it does a lot of very innovative things, with especially with the battle system and how the typings work out. And instead of just being, like, super effective in doing more damage, they'll do things that are kind of like intuitive. So if you shock, you can like use an electric type, but it'll only shock like water types, and then they'll take more damage for being shocked, but it can't shock plastic types because plastic isn't susceptible to that. And like, you know, if you use wind or like an air type on a grass type, it uproots them, and then they like have a debuff because they're uprooted now. And so it's kind of neat because you don't actually see the chart. You just, every time it happens, it tells you, and you're like, oh, that's really clever. Like poison, if you hit a metal type with a poison, instead of doing anything, it just coats their claws in poison and now they're stronger. And you're like, well, yeah, why did you think that was going to work, you idiot? Yeah.
I think that's,
you can't poison a metal guy.
I think that's what makes it more unique, is not necessarily the type matchups. Because Pokemon is like, oh, you know, rock is against birds because you two birds with one stone or something.
Yeah.
But what makes Cassepius interesting is the way that it changes the statuses, where Pokemon doesn't do that, you know, like... Like if you use a fire on a plastic, it melts it, and like I think it like lowers its defense or something like that. But it, you know, that's that little extra nuance of how you can not only be super effective, but like, also give the stat changes, or good or bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's usually like debuff kind of style things. And then also like on the flip side of that is that you can do the opposite, where like if you use a water type move on a grass type, they start getting like a health regen every turn because you've watered them, and that's something that plants really appreciate. And so there's almost this like kind of like you're trying to like play with typings, almost like bait out certain moves, or like even use, because it's always double battles, even like use a move on your like partner monster to like give it that buff. And it's very, very interesting, but at the same time it still has that Pokemon style where it's cozy, it's got, you know, the same kind of almost like that sort of humor, and you go around and it's just exciting, like, oh, what's it going to evolve into, or like, oh, there's a new guy on the overworld, I'm going to go run into him and see what it is so I can capture them. And it's just that, as for as many good changes as I think they've made to make it a little bit more engaging, it's still that same core of a creature capture style game that, I don't know, maybe there's some of the Pokemon nostalgia, but it's something to me, that style of game is always so incredibly like just,
it's
relaxing,
been implanted into us. We've been playing Pokemon since before we could like write our names on pieces of paper, basically, you know, like it's part of our DNA.
It's true. Like I can't like not light up when I see a Pokemon thing. Like there's just, even regardless of whether or not I actually think about it in the end, there's that brief spark of like, oh, Pokemon, oh my god. And like, that social conditioning.
Yeah.
But Cassette Beast is great. We had Monster Sanctuary the year before, Cassette Beast in 2023. So 2024,
we've had some good ones.
I've got to find at least one good creature capture to kind of get super obsessed
will
with
it
for,
be,
for a month.
Will we get into playing what's it called? The
Power
World.
No, it sounded great at first, and they're like, you got to build a base. And I was like, oh my god, I'm going home.
Okay,
like, nope.
I'm going home and not to my base.
Yeah, not to my base. Which brings us nicely to our next category. And my answer is not going to be a game that has you build a base, because it is.
Yeah, we got our next category, best new mechanic.
Yeah, so this is either a best new mechanic or a unique use of a mechanic you've seen in other games before, but something that was just new and intuitive, I suppose.
That's right. Okay, I want to go first for this one. I'm really proud of my answer here, and I really like it. The best new mechanic in this year, 2023, well, last year, you know, the best new mechanic is online play. And the game with which I'm awarding it to is F-Zero 99 on the Switch. I love that game. When I was away on my trip to Europe, I played so much of it. You know, it was just so nice to drop into a race here and there. But F-Zero, you know, is one of those games that's been in the Nintendo vault forever. And, you know, there's never been a new game for years. And the classic is always revered as like one of the best ones. And, you know, I didn't really play too much of the classic one growing up, but that's essentially what this one is. It's a pared down version of the classic F-Zero game. There's only four drivable cars, you know, they've really lowered the roster. But what they did is they tweaked them all, they're finely tuned, and it's like a 99 elimination race. It is just so much fun to have that type of death race feeling where you're like part of this big crowd and then, you know, the timer comes up and it's like, okay, in the next 5 seconds, if you're not up to like, you know, 80th spot or better, you're going to get eliminated. And you're trying to, you know, boost ahead of people to stay above the pack. But by boosting an F-Zero, you are lowering your HP. So people are now trying to hit you into walls and take you out, where the, you know, the AI and original F-Zero would never do that to you because they're just going to be on the track doing whatever they're doing. But there's this new sort of, I don't know if I'd say it's competitive because you're just, you're still racing against yourself, but it is that kind of human interaction. There's an urgency, yeah. There's pressure. There is a lot of room for learning the tracks. And, you know, I would never really do a time trial in a racing game like that. But in F-Zero 99, I was like, okay, I know this course really well. Like I've seen people try and take this shortcut. Like I'm going to try and take it when I know I'm behind on this race and see how I do. And, you know, you go through and you collect your little, you know, finish 5 races using this car and above second place or something like that. And you unlock all these different colors and it's just such a nice refresh of a game that, you know, I wouldn't say this is a new entry per se in F-Zero in terms of like a giant new mainline game, obviously, but it's certainly a way to bring back a classic that I think is totally based on the mechanic that has been given, which is online play. And it's just, it's one of the best online games I played last year. Honestly, not that I played a ton, but it was great. I wouldn't be surprised if it is like easily their most successful of those 99 games, or I think it should be based on like what the other ones were, but it was awesome.
Is there any other ones other than Tetris?
Well, like Tetris 99.
I guess there was Mario.
There was Mario 99. I think there was maybe even one other one too, but I don't know. F-Zero 99 rocks. It's great.
A race makes a lot more sense because it's more like directly interactive with the other players as opposed to like you have your own Tetris board and then you have to like come up with mechanics.
I mean, the Tetris one kind of works because there's like games like Puyo Puyo or, you know, Pokemon Puzzle League where you give people spam and stuff. I think
that's true.
It's just a little bit less direct, whereas in F-Zero, you're like chasing a guy down in front of you, you know, and it's very tangible.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it's cool. Like it really surprises me, like, because especially how big like battle royales are, and like, you know, like they blew up for a long time and there's less of them coming out now, but they're still like Fortnite will live forever. Like it's such an amazing game and like they are so popular, but then it's almost kind of strange that they haven't really been explored in other types of genres outside of shooters. And like a racing game makes a lot of sense for something like that, like format where you have like a huge amount of players and they slowly get eliminated as it goes on. So like, but yeah, like a racing game seems like such a no-brainer. Like, of course that would be a good fit, but then I don't know, I guess F-Zero is kind of like a cool franchise to throw a bone to as well.
Well, I mean, it works well enough. And there's, I think what really helps F-Zero more than other racing games is the fact that to boost, you have to sacrifice your HP because that makes it so you're more likely to be attacked when your car starts smoking and you can see that someone's low on HP, because if you kill someone, you get a lot of, there's like a boost meter you're filling up by collecting orbs that fall from people when they bump into stuff. And so you can, that's how you get your boost. And so if you kill someone, you get a lot of boost and that's obviously good for you. And so it's cool to see how aggressive people get in those situations. Yeah. Or how you're going to play it. You're like, oh man, I need to boost here to get, you know, to stay alive. But if I boost, I'm going to die and someone's just going to kill me. Like, what do I do? It's quite stressful.
That is super cool.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your answer here?
So this was actually the first category I filled in because I knew immediately what the game would be. And I considered this for a few other categories. Honestly, this game is amazing. I played Tunic early in 2023 and the game blew my mind. Like it starts out pretty kind of like, okay, isometric game, adventure game, kind of like Zelda inspired, very Zelda inspired. I mean, he's even like wearing the outfit. Like it's very much
called
that kind of style of game.
It's called a Tunic.
Yeah, exactly. His name is Tunic. He's a little fox. It starts out this cute kind of game. I was like, okay, maybe it's going to be like a Death's Door sort of style, kind of Zelda-y. You know, you've got maybe some hard boss fights. There's like a Souls mechanic where if you die, you go pick up your thing, whatever. And then the game, like it's good when you start out, but the game blows your mind later. And one of the coolest things it does is you build the instruction manual as you play. So how that works is there's an instruction manual within the game, and it is like gorgeous. It's got amazing art. It's like the best quality version of one of those games you'd get from like when you bought a game in the 90s or something. And like it came with that, and it would tell you about the characters, and it would have pages where there's the map, and then have another page where it tells you what all the items do that you can find in the game, and then another page for like, you know, the weapons, and then another page is like a lore page, and it just, it's very detailed. But the thing is that you collect these pages as you go. You don't start out with it. You have to collect pages, and sometimes you collect them, or oftentimes you collect them out of order. And it's also in a language that is not a real language. Well, I mean, it is a real language now in the sense that it is logical and you could learn how to read it. But it is not a language that existed before Tunic, so you will always be looking at it as if it is something that you cannot understand. And you have to piece together what the manual means based on the pictures, the art, based on how you interact with things in the game. And so the game starts out as this cute, fun action adventure game, and then it turns into this like amazing rabbit hole where you're like, that guy who's got like all like the pictures on his wall, and he's got like the red threads connecting mm-hmm. them as you try mm-hmm. to figure out like what's going on in this manual. And the coolest thing about it is like there are mechanics that you technically have available to you from the beginning of the game, but they're not intuitive that you would just accidentally do them. But then you eventually put together, like find a piece of the puzzle, and it tells you how to do them. And then you do it and it just works. And it's like, oh my God, like this has just been there the whole time. But like, I didn't know because the manual I didn't have it yet. And like, it was just such a unique and creative experience where that almost kind of like meta aspect of building out the manual of how to play the game informed how you played the game, but you played the game to build it. And it was just this like amazing, like almost like circular kind of experience where it became less about like, okay, what boss am I going to fight next? And more about like, where's the next page? What mm-hmm. else is this game hiding? I have to figure it out. And like, I think it goes so incredibly deep. Like I beat the game and I didn't have all the pages of the book. And I did some research afterwards, just like looking it up on YouTube and on Reddit. And there's like all this crazy like post-game stuff, and there's like something that's like out of the game to do with the manual, and it just like went like I thought I had gone down a rabbit hole playing it, and then there's like six other rabbit holes that you can jump in after.
So cool.
It's so cool. It's such a creative and clever design, like whatever level you choose to engage with it, because it's so cool if you want to be the kind of person that like really focuses on it and does all the extra like optional things. But it's also just a really cool mechanic if you just want to play the game and you enjoy those kind of like discovery moments where you naturally do find a few more pieces, and that opens up a part of the game that you just didn't know existed. And there's something really cool about that like moment of discovery where like, oh my God, like I can do this. Like, I know what this thing is for now, and I can do this, and I have this new ability. And there's something different about, like, I've had it the whole time, and suddenly I know how to interact with it, versus, like, oh, I just got this upgrade. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I don't know, it was just, it kept blowing my mind every time I would sit down to play. I would think, like, okay, this is cool. I know what I'm doing now. I understand the game. And then it would be like, oh, that's cute. Like, here's the next thing.
We say we're going to go back to games all the time, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but that really is a game that I think I need to return to this year, just based on, it's very much like when I recommended Inscription to you, I think, is mm-hmm. like returning the favor on that. So
yeah, I think that's exactly, like, they're totally different games to play, like completely different styles, completely different genres, but it gave me that same kind of like shock and awe every, like, mm-hmm. consistently playing. I think with Tunic, it just there's a set amount of time you need to play first before those layers start to get peeled away.
Yeah, that's right.
And I can definitely see a lot of people sitting down to play it kind of taking it at face value, like what it looks like, and not making it to those sections. So I think for anyone who's kind of played Tunic and didn't hate it but didn't really get too far, like just keep going, just like peek around one more corner, it'll be worth it.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, with that, let's move to our next category. It is the best music or soundtrack.
This one's really just in the name.
It's musical notes.
It's got good music.
Yeah, that's right. We got a couple of good answers for this one, I think, but I would like to start with Hi-Fi mm-hmm. Rush, because this game, phenomenal. You play as a guy, his name is Chai, and the whole thing of this game is he's just a dude, he's working, he's doing his thing, he works at some factory, and he's playing around with his, I think it was like a Walkman or something, it's a music player, mm-hmm. and it flies up, it goes into a hydraulic press, and it, you know, there's a whole sequence where he's on a conveyor belt, and the press rams it into his chest, and he now has a cybernetic implant of his music player, and he suffers from synesthesia, which I looked up is a real condition. It's when you experience multiple senses at the same time, including like tasting words or linking colors to like numbers and mm-hmm. letters and stuff.
Or so like smells have a color.
That's yeah. right. So for Chai, the world is now perceived through music, which is the whole game. So the whole game, everything is moving along. The soundtrack in the back, you'll be looking around the environments and things in your environment, like screws in the wall or cones on the ground, they're all moving with the beat and stuff. But not in a weird and off-putting way. It's very charming and very vibrant, and it all just fits together very well. And, you know, Chai will snap along with the music. And when he runs, it's kind of to the music. And it you don't have to worry about the beat in those moments in any way, but it just does it seamlessly for you. And it's just very smooth and fits together perfectly. The game also has licensed music in it. I know some other ones do too. This by no means is the licensed music like the reason this game stands out, but I think it's used very tastefully. They have some Black Keys tracks and some Nine Inch Nails. They also use, I think it's one of Beethoven's waltzes or one of those like classical music pieces, but they use it in conjunction with this cutscene and this mech kind of robot all building up. And the whole section is just very, very cool. And Tango DreamWorks, the studio that makes this game, they described it as like their dream game they want to make. And I think that they really had a lot of fun making it. And you can tell even just with like the audio tracks, like you're watching it almost as like, you know, when you're watching a popcorn kind of comedy movie and the audio track comes in just as something funny starts happening. And then there's the whole montage where like that happens. And sometimes it can be cheesy. Sometimes it works. And that's how I describe it in this game too. But that's totally the kind of energy they're going for. And I think more often than not, they pull it off. Like, I don't know. I won't get into the humor, but I think like it is funnier, more funny than it's not. But I just think the way the game is so centralized around music in every aspect is great, because you're also attacking on beat and listening to the music and calling your partners in on beat, and you get combos and, you know, increased damage and everything. But it all just feeds back to the sound, and it's a great game. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and the soundtrack's a big part of it.
I could not agree more. Like, I was so impressed by Hi-Fi Rush. I am sitting here like ashamed because I never beat Hi-Fi Rush. And I think it came out and I was excited about it, but I was in the middle of like playing something else. And so I started Hi-Fi Rush because like I like bought into the hype and I really liked it. But then I went back to what I was playing before and then never ended up finishing Hi-Fi Rush. So I did write it down originally for this category, and then I felt bad because I didn't feel like I played enough of it.
Sure.
So I replaced it. But like, if Hi-Fi Rush isn't my 2024 game for soundtrack, like, I mean, I guess Persona's on there too. God damn it.
Right. Persona can win multiple other categories.
Yeah, that's true. But like, yeah, Hi-Fi Rush, I was just so impressed. Like, I really think I would need to play more music games, because like music is such a big thing in games for me. So games that are centered around music, really, like I just feel like I don't play enough, but I gravitate towards them every time I do start one. Hi-Fi Rush is just so good. Like, there's so much else to it too. Like, it's fun, the world is amazing, like it's got that kind of comic booky art style that like everything just seems to fit. And yeah, it's loud, but it's not obnoxious, it's just charming. And like, there's so many little details you can look at. And you said Tango is like their DreamWorks. Like, I'd not heard that before, but it like seems so obvious like that is correct.
Well, because they like, were making like dark and horror kind of games before that, and this is very different.
Yeah, Within or something,
yeah,
right?
That's right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Like, it's just such a charming game. Like, it's not. We talked earlier about like the Nintendo charm, and this is a different kind of charm. It doesn't feel like a Nintendo game, but I would say it's equally as charming as something that like Nintendo would put out. But it's just got that little bit of a different style, almost like a punky, quirky, but still very like peachy kind of vibe to it. And yeah, man, it's good. I gotta, it's great. Man,
gotta go back. Gotta go back.
Gotta go back. I hope it's still on Game Pass. I think it is.
It's Xbox game. It's always going to be on there. So
yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. Fantastic. Yeah, I think it's coming to.
It's coming Twitch to or something. I think that was rumored. I don't think it actually is. I don't know. Maybe later.
Okay. Well, we'll see. It'd be a great Switch game. Well, I went for, because I couldn't put Hi-Fi Rush, I put down Persona 5 the Royal, because that's that you can't play Persona and then not
a well documented soundtrack, I would say.
Yeah, like I listened, I was at the gym earlier today running on the treadmill and I was listening to Persona 5. Like that's, it is invaded my life. Like it's just part of my music. And the Royal is cool because you get all the tracks from regular Persona 5, but then you have some kind of remix versions and a few new tracks. And it's just,
what more
it's
can Persona you say? 5. What more can you say?
Persona 5. It's
great. Shout out to Lynn, our favorite. Okay, Kate. Well, let's talk about the most screenshotable game of the year, and I'll let you go first on that one.
Yeah, so this is just not memorizing, but maybe you've memorized it because
you don't need
so...
to memorize it. You got a picture now. It's a screenshot.
Yeah. It's just an amazing environment design or just something that looks incredible. So I put down a game called Moonscars, which I don't know if you remember me playing, but it is essentially a really small 2D kind of Souls-like sort of game. But it just, like, first of all, it's a great game, and I kind of wanted to give it an award. But second of all, when I was looking back at what I played and I saw, like, the visual of this game again, it brought me back. Like,
I'm looking it up right now. It looks nice. Looks good.
It's gorgeous. It has this, like, really minimalist, it's not pixel, but it's almost... it's got this like grim kind of, almost looks like it's painted, I want to say. Like it's a gritty dark world, like everything's bleak, and it's a lot of like blacks and grays, but then you get like some standout colors, like your main character is red and some of the enemies were like swings on attacks will be like a bright red color. And I think it's a great game, but it just, I think, like, just look it up. Like it's so hard to explain like a really unique art style, but it's just this beautiful painted grim, and like I would find myself just kind of like stopping and like looking at things in the game, and like I'm pretty sure, like, and I don't do this very often, but I'm pretty sure, like, as I was playing, I like took a bunch of screenshots because I get to a room that I thought looked really cool. I had a cool throne in the background, or it was like this cool part of a castle or something.
You're like, hell, and, like, yeah, it was, you're like, shit,
it,
yeah,
it was beautiful. Shit, yeah. And I like took some screenshots and I just like sent them to my friends. It was like, look how cool this game looks. And like, not even about what was happening or like the mechanics, just like genuinely, like, I think this looks cool. Please like appreciate the screenshot with no context. But yeah, shout out Moonscars is such a cool game.
I like it. All right, this is where we get a little bit interesting, Kate. My most screenshotable game, Final Fantasy 16.
Okay, I think deserved, but also, ooh, because it goes in a lot of categories.
Goes in
and
a
we
lot
both
of categories.
Obviously have it on our
I
list.
I knew it was on our list, but yeah, this is where I put it for mine. I you know, I was just, I couldn't give my game of the year to this game. Really enjoyed it. I think it was great. It was, if it wasn't the runner-up, it was very close to, it was definitely third place. But it you know, one of the most standout aspects of this game, undoubtedly, is the visual spectacle. And just the things that you witness being part of the viewership of these cutscenes, like not even talking about gameplay, you know, these cutscenes are some of the most insane things I've ever seen happen in a piece of media. There's like giant beings flying into space and like shooting lasers at each other and fireballs and transforming and slamming each other down like in Dragon Ball Z. And they're like
insane kaiju fights sometimes. Like, oh, it's so bizarre. Sometimes we'll be doing some, like, you'll be fighting a few knights doing some little side quests. And then like 20 minutes later, yeah, there's like these like massive, like mythical creatures just like fireballing like the sun at each other.
Yeah, it is.
It's
something
so
else.
Cool.
It's so cool. But even outside of those giant epic kind of kaiju moments, I even think, you know, the characters themselves have some really cool designs, like Clive's armor. I think most of the main characters, like, you know,
have massive boots.
Very cool, kind of those Final Fantasy designs, you know, that some of the environments you go through, like that that one town, I forget the name of it now, but it's kind of got the waterways in it, and there's the bridges mm-hmm. going across, you know. Yep. Very, very,
I know what you mean. The ruins you go into with, like, those kind of, like, ancient ruins always look, like, so cool to me. They reminded me of the place you go to in Elden Ring where you go mm-hmm. underground and it's, yes. like, Noxella with the sky totally. In the ceiling.
And when you're underground, you know, and there's those palaces with just their crystalline staircases mm-hmm. and, you know, the leads up into that huge pillar that just goes towering into the sky of a crystal. It's just such an amazing environment, and I think that's something that Final Fantasy in general usually just nails, is these picturesque, amazing fantasy environments. And then you just mixing that with the icon battles, basically, it's just a visual mm-hmm. spectacle. And you know, I could go on too, like the attacks you use in battle are cool as hell to watch too. Maybe not in a screenshot, but in a video clip, you're like swinging your sword around, there's lasers, fire, you're getting wings coming out of your back, you're flying into the air, you're pulling enemies towards you. Like, it is such a fun thing to witness. I just think it, yeah, you know, if it's not game of the year, it's got to go in this visual category here. It was amazing.
I think this is extremely well deserved. Like, this is the kind of game where, like, every single ability on the skill trees that you can get, I bought and used for at least a few fights because I wanted to see how cool they looked. And that genuinely was, like, the motivation. It's like, I don't need another, like, long-ranged attack, like, projectile. I don't need this, whatever. Like, this isn't going to fit my playstyle. But, like, I'll be damned if I'm not going to try it out just so I can see how cool it is. And I was never disappointed.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. And, I mean, the game, I think it has some flaws in other areas. Not mm-hmm. perfect, for sure. But I think one area where it's pretty damn close to perfect is in the visual aspect. So that is my... That's my Agreed. Most screenshotable.
Agreed.
Leads us into our next category, Kate. Favorite character.
Ooh, so this is for the character who's got the best development, best writing, best design, best mechanics. Just whatever aspect you want to look at it, like whoever just got a really full package.
That's right.
And this, I genuinely wanted to put Joshua from Final Fantasy.
Oh my god. Just because of the voice actor.
Because the voice, exactly. When he's a kid, he's Hugo from Plague Tale. And if anyone's ever listened to me talk, like, I love Hugo. Like, that kid is just, like, I would die for Hugo. I would do anything for that kid. And when I heard Joshua for the first time, I was like, oh my god, Hugo. And of course, Joshua's your younger brother, and you kind of have to protect him. And I was like, it's Hugo 2.0. Amazing. But I didn't put Joshua because there are two characters. I've cheated slightly and put two. Mm-hmm. But it is them as a combination that is important, because I played Florence.
Okay.
And so it's Florence, the titular character, and Kirsch. And I mean, this is a game just about characters. It's a visual novel, maybe only like 2 hours long, maybe not even 2 hours. And it's just the story of these two people and, you know, the circumstances in which they meet and the relationship that they have and how their relationship changes over time and their eventual separation at the end of the game. And then just kind of how Florence, like, moves on with her life afterwards. And it's just such an incredibly human story, and both of these characters are so incredibly relatable. Like, there isn't a single line of dialogue in the entire game, but it is just told through this amazing kind of, like, picture book artwork, and just in these kind of, like, mundane moments. Like, you have them, you know, having an argument at the grocery store while they're shopping for dinner, and you have them kind of, you know, both uncertain about, you know, if they should pursue an unstable career or something that they're really, like, motivated and inspired to do, or if they should do something that is maybe a little bit more safe, and, like, you know, meeting each other's parents, and just these kind of, like, mundane but also very meaningful life events that is just such a quintessential human experience, and you know, how a relationship changes over time and how you grow together or maybe grow apart. And it was such a moving, fantastic video game experience that, like, I felt so incredibly connected to these characters who I spent, like, an hour with, like, and like 90 minutes. Talk. Like, yeah. Yeah. But it's just, man, like, it is just one of the best video game experiences I've ever had. Like, you know, video games as art, and, you know, how you can use the medium to kind of tell this sort of story with the interactive bits, and how the puzzles kind of work to reinforce, like, what's happening in the scene. And I just could not say enough. I genuinely wanted to put this as, like, I considered it for Game of the Year. Like, I genuinely could not be moved more by just the very normal, relatable people in a very normal, relatable life situation. And something about getting to be along and witness that ride with these characters is just, it, you know, touches your heart. And I don't think I'll ever forget Florence or man. Kirsch.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. I like them even more than Hugo.
Thank God. I hate that kid. Anyway. That's a great answer. I think
it's a high bar. It's a high bar, not a low bar.
That's true. Everything you said is 100% correct. Florence is great. You should play it. I won't harp on it any more than that, because I might talk about it in a bit. I'm glad you had a lot to say about yours, because my favorite character... And this is a bit of a cop-out, just because I wanted to play... This was the hardest one for me, honestly. I really wanted to get Eastward on my list. So my favorite character is Sam from Eastward, who is the little girl in the game. And, you know, I wouldn't say she is... It's hard to talk about her, actually. I'm not going to say too much, because she's very, very related to the plot and heavy spoilers in the game and kind of her whole... everything about her, so I can't really tell you much about her herself. But what I do like about her as a character among Eastward is that the game itself is largely quite pessimistic and negative and dark, and she is consistently throughout the game the one kind of bright, shining light of positive energy and youthful kind of ignorance. And she's got a big heart and an open mind, and she's just very different than a lot of the other characters who have kind of given up or worried or living in a very dark space in the game. So I think she's quite a nice character in that way to balance out the cast. But other than that, I'll leave the other reasons that she's very cool to those who have played Eastward, and not spoil it here for the rest of you. But you guys should play Eastward. It's a very, very good game.
That's so cool. I have to play Hi-Fi Rush now, and I got to play Eastward too.
A hard decision.
That is tough.
Let's move on to the most unique game. Guess what you would have put on this.
Yeah, so this is a game not quite like anything you've ever experienced. Maybe you never will again. So I unfortunately threw Tunic away, and then I threw Florence away. So I had to really sit and think about this one, and I went with a little game called Bookwalker. So this is another indie off of my Game Pass subscription. So thank you, Game Pass. And it's just a really cool game. So I think, like, the mechanics aren't necessarily unique, but the premise is really interesting. And so the idea is that you are kind of working for something sort of like, you kind of got like a prison sentence almost, and you're working for this sort of like shady kind of these shady clients. And essentially you are a thief, but you go into books to steal things. So you'll steal kind of like mythical artifacts like Mjolnir or Excalibur, or like some kind of like mythical item. You are able to physically go into a book and then physically come out of the book with the thing that you've stolen. So that's kind of a neat premise already. I read probably as much as I play games, so that appealed to me as well. Kind of like there's a lot of really nice literary references and some kind of book jokes, which are fun and you don't often see in video games. But it just ended up being a really interesting game. And I think it's definitely the story that is the most fun. Like, there's a little bit of combat, there's a little bit of light puzzle solving, but definitely like the writing in the story is the main hook, which, fair enough for a book game. But it's just neat. Like, you meet this character when you go into a book for the first time, and they're kind of like trapped, and there's sort of this mystery around what's going on with this character and kind of how the mystery of like overall of how you get in and out of books. But it's also just got this like really neat narrative going on about how, like, you know, kind of just subtly question some things, like what is fate in a world where everything's been written out, right? Like, can you change things that are going to happen in the book? Like, if you do change things, like, how does that affect the characters in the book? And like, is there a moral consequence to, you know, like deceiving someone in that situation, or to killing someone within the book, because when you leave, it'll go back like to being mm-hmm. the book again. Mm-hmm. And like, it has this like very interesting like sub narrative going on. And I think it uses the book format to kind of have like a playground where it can kind of bring up a little bit more like serious topics, but also still being that kind of like light, fun adventure. Like, let's go around this fantasy book that's like kind of, you know, like steampunk Norse gods and like
everyone's favorite genre. It's just
but it's cool, right? And it's really neat, and it's got some neat stuff too, where like you get stuck in the book, so you have to get out of the book and find something in the real world that you can take back in the book with you that will get you through whatever like obstacle you've come up against. And it was just such a cool, unique indie game, and I think like it just it stood out. And maybe I'm biased, I love the book stuff, but
no, that's a cool answer. I like it.
Yeah.
So for mine, I put Cocoon. I mean, this game, amazingly unique. It's interesting you say taking things out of books and using them to do other things outside of the world, because that is what Cocoon is. This is a very difficult game to describe, but what you're doing is basically popping in and out of several different worlds, and each one is contained within a marble. And you can sort of jump out of one marble and into another one, and each one is its own self-contained world. But where the game gets really unique is that you can carry one of the marbles into another one, sort of like those stacking dolls. And so the orbs you bring into another orb can then be used to solve a puzzle within it. So you'll have to put an orb in a holder to make a bridge go across. And so that orb is now stuck inside the other one. And then you're solving a puzzle, but you can't get it out until you can figure out a way back across that bridge, so you can remove that orb out of the one that's currently inside. And it's just these kind of layered puzzles that you're solving and jumping in and out of different worlds. And each one has slightly different mechanics inside and whatnot. But it's just so fascinating how complex the game is. But then when you're playing it, it does such a good job of directing you through the puzzles. You're never able to leave an orb behind back in an old, you know, area where you might need it later. Like they never let you, you always have what you need. They're always perfectly somehow signposting you without having any kind of text or directions. It just flows really nicely, and you feel so smart for figuring these things out, even though it may or may not be super complicated. But you just get into this flow state of like grabbing the orbs, take them here, put it here, go across this platform, go back into this orb, grab this one, come out here. It is an amazing game. I've never quite played a puzzle game like it. You know, I think a lot of puzzle games are quite unique because just of their nature of like what you're trying to do. Like Viewfinder was another one that I found to be quite interesting, like zooming into the pictures and you know, I won't get into Viewfinder, but Cocoon is certainly a very, very fun game and a very unique puzzle game. If anyone's looking for any one of those, and again, it's on Game Pass too, so really no excuse at all, but it's a great experience. Very, very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I think when it first got shown off, it was like the big Annapurna indie coming out for the year. And like, it's gorgeous. It looks so good. I was really intimidated by the puzzle design because I'm really bad at like visualizing how it would work. But I really want to play it. So
yeah,
we'll probably talk more Cocoon.
Yeah, definitely. In the next few months. Definitely. I think that the concept of what the game is could be extrapolated by some really cruel developers to make an insanely complicated and like very thrilling puzzle game for sickos out there that want to really bash their heads against the walls. But you know, they kind of kept the guardrails on just enough with Cocoon to help the normies like us figure those out. So that's great. Next up, Kate, this is our second last category before Game of the Year, the best ending.
Yeah. So this is, if it was the best boss fight, the best story beat, the best revelation, just whatever ending, like you were holding your breath and then you were like, that was satisfying.
So I'd like to go first if you don't mind, because I've got a game that we've already spoken about on the list.
Okay. Oh, wonderful. Okay.
So my best ending is Florence. I had to get Florence on the list. And you know, mm-hmm. I won't retread what you've already said about the game, because I mean, we've had a few podcasts now where we've really given Florence its flowers, rightfully so. But what I love about the ending specifically of Florence is that it doesn't do the cop-out where she like finds another relationship and like, oh, that's great, you know, you're gonna find love again. Like, that's not maybe how it goes for her, you know? What I like about Florence, at least in this moment of time, is that she takes up her passion. She follows her her passion of being an artist. And it just shows, like, you know, no matter what kind of has happened in your life, that she's found fulfillment in following what means something to her, regardless of those other circumstances. I just think that's such a, like you said, it's humanizing, right? And I think that whole story front to back, from when she like meets him at the start to the end, when she's kind of reached the end of the time we spend with her, I think is just a phenomenal way to like seal her story for the game. Honestly, it's perfect. What more can you say?
Yeah, I could not agree more. I could probably talk for the next 4 hours about Florence, but I won't, because you know, I know some of us have to, you got to get up for work tomorrow morning, right. But yeah. Like it's so good. I consider Florence for that. And then I was, you know, it just kind of came down how I was slotting in my last few games. I was like, the character is, it's equally as good as the ending, for the exact same reasons. So, this is where I slotted in Final Fantasy 16. It's just so fun. And for the exact same reasons, you know, we praised the game. I loved it. It's not without its flaws for sure. But I think it really did stick the ending. There's some really cool sequences by the end for the same reasons we were describing earlier, the bombastic, like crazy over the top, amazing cinematics and, you know, these huge, ridiculous, like exaggerated fights. But I also think like in terms of story beats, it was a pretty good ending. I think it really surprised me with the emotional core of kind of how the game ends, especially with some of the relationships between characters, because the game is not short. You spend a lot of time with Clive and the various supporting cast, and everyone kind of gets like a cool moment at the end. And there's like kind of a big moment near the end where everyone kind of teams up and works together, which I really appreciated. And then the final like ending scene with Clive, it had an emotional beat that I really genuinely felt quite like drawn towards. And it's very much the like over the top anime kind of like exaggerated sort of style. And that sometimes doesn't always land because it's the exact opposite of Florence, where it's not very grounded and very like feeling real or true to your real life experience. But something about it worked really well for me. And so I felt just kind of like a good closure for the game, both in terms of gameplay and story and character beats. And it's got a kind of cute little like post-credit scene as well that I appreciated. And I really enjoyed my time with Final Fantasy 16. It could have been my surprising game because I'm never a Final Fantasy fan, but 16 was so good. Yeah. And I went 16-2.
Hey, I got a DLC. I got to start that soon. So we got a little bit more at least. That's a good choice. Mm-hmm. I like it. I really thought that might have been your game of the year. So now I'm interested to see, because here we are, Kate. It's time for Game of the Year 2023. A big award. This is not a light award, everyone. Winning our Game of the Year here on this podcast is a huge monumental feat. And these games are the big winners. So do you want to go first or do you want me to go? What are you thinking?
First, because I slightly cheated. Well, I didn't cheat. I did something I said last year that I was going to do, and I followed through with it.
Okay.
And that meant that Final Fantasy couldn't win, though it's a very good game. But what did win for me was God of War Ragnarok. Because when we did our 2022 awards at the time, I was in the middle of playing God of War Ragnarok. And I decided, partially so I didn't have to have it lose to Elden Ring, that I was going to refrain from putting Ragnarok on my list because I didn't feel like I had played enough of it. Although it definitely deserved to qualify for many awards, I wanted to finish the game. So in 2023, I finished God of War Ragnarok, and it is an easy game of the year. That game is incredible. We've talked a lot about Ragnarok, like, for every reason we've talked about any other great game, like visuals, combat, style, story, characters.
It's got it all, man. It's got it all.
World, like, emotional. Like, I cried so many times in God of War Ragnarok. It has the craziest plot twist of any game. And there are lines to this day that if I hear them, I tear up. Like, I genuinely was listening to God of War soundtrack at the gym the other day, and I was like, working out. Like, I was like, it's how I stay in shape. I just think about Kratos. But no, I remember it distinctly. I could tell you, like, I know exactly what I was doing at the gym. I know exactly. I was doing bicep curls, thinking about Kratos, obviously. And the music came on. I was thinking about how good the game was while I was, you know, lifting. And then I thought about the one scene in the game where Kratos and Brock have a conversation.
Oh, no. You can't do this
to
me right
now. And if you know the conversation, like, you'll know it immediately. Kratos says something really kind to Brock. And Brock is like, if there's one character that's like the comic relief, it's Brock. But this conversation that Kratos and Brock have, I genuinely almost cried at the gym. Like, I had to stop what I was doing and just, like, refocus on where I was and how this was not an appropriate time to start crying. But God of War Ragnarok is just 10 out of 10, one of the best games I've ever played. Like, holy fuck, God of War Ragnarok.
Yeah, it is so, so good. It is so good. Mm-hmm. If I played that game last year and it, or if it qualified for this list, it would be my game of the year too. But it didn't. So I had to award it to something else. And my game of the year this year, first of all, congratulations, God of War. Huge winner. Mm-hmm. Good for you. I forgot you had said that you were going to hold off and come back for this year. And I'm glad you followed
through. I'm so glad that I did that because I was like,
hey, the other thing,
I just slotted in. Perfect.
The other thing, testament to, like, it still withstood a whole year's worth of more games that you've played that nothing was able to dethrone it too. Which is,
yeah, and it didn't even come close. Like, Final Fantasy was great, but it's not God of War.
Yeah, true enough. All right, well, my game of the year from last year, 2023, was Resident Evil 4 Remake.
I forgot you played that. Yeah. Yes.
What a game. So cool. What a game. This is one you absolutely have to play, Kate. I know you've actually played more Resident Evil than I have recently, but this is just such a good game. And I've never played the original RE4, so it was a totally fresh experience for me. I know some people wouldn't probably put a remake on the list, and honestly, I might not either had I have already played. It takes away something for me personally to replay a lot of, you know, replay a game even if I played it once, but never played Resident Evil 4 before. And the remake, my God, what a fun time, you know. The game is just a complete package. The story itself is kind of it's just a way to get through the game more so, but the real crux of it is just the characters and the situation you're in. They're just this perfect mix of, like, it's so serious and so dark, but it's not quite scary enough. And the characters are just cheesy enough to where it just fits together so well. It's kind of like that Airplane humor, for anyone that does a really deep cut reference, where it's like the characters say their lines with completely straight face, but they're in ridiculous situations. Like, that happens in this game. But, I mean, the combat scenarios are just such a fun time. I think it's got a lot in common with God of War like that. You get put in these big arenas, but instead of being, like, powerful Kratos, in this game, you're just a guy. So you have to, like, really be worried about your positioning.
He's not just a guy. I've seen him do, like, cool roundhouse kicks and stuff. Like, if anything, he's a super cool guy.
It's true. He is a very cool guy. I put on my sports sunglasses actually partway through the game because I unlocked a cosmetic. So, I mean, I did have that. But I couldn't get enough of the scenarios that you're put in the game, and the combat encounters and the environments that you get to have them in. You know, they're multi-level. You're climbing up ladders and you're going up onto floors of houses and shutting the door behind you because you don't want zombies to chase you, and then climbing out through the window and flanking out behind them. And, you know, you're stabbing them in the back and trying to be stealthy, and the next moment someone will see you and you've got a horde chasing you from behind and you're trying to use explosives. The levels are looping around. You're desperately searching for ammo. You're trying to find health and craft it. You know, there's just so much going on, and it has that perfect tension of, like, oh shit, I'm nearly out of ammo, but not quite. And you have just enough. And maybe it's not in the gun that you might want. Maybe you really want to use your shotgun, but man, you're out of ammo. So you got to use this rifle you have, and you got to figure it out, even though you're in a hallway. And it's always just a fun challenge, and it never seems impossible, even though it's got some tough moments. But it was just addicting to go through all the different environments. You're in these creepy kind of ghost towns, and then you're in these, like, catacombs and mansions, and there's just a huge variety, and there's collectibles everywhere you're looking for. I mean, I feel like I'm babbling on about this game, but it's amazing. I know we've talked about it before, there's just so much in it, you know? And then you're playing suitcase Tetris because your inventory is, you got to fit it all in. And you're like, man, I really want to bring this rocket launcher with me, but it takes up like a lot of room in my suitcase. And we've all been on the plane before. So
like, they're really cracking down on those overweight charges.
That's right. Better leave the rocket launcher at home. But you know, it influences your decisions on like what guns you're going to purchase, because if you want to use a new gun, that sounds great, but like, man, are you going to be able to take it with you? What are you going to leave behind? Are you going to leave those other two guns you like back with the, you know, the inventory place because they don't fit in your bag? A lot of cool decisions.
Or maybe like you'll take the gun, but you've had to drop like the healing kits that you had with you, and you're just going to really risk reward that you don't need them because you've got the firepower. And yeah, I always think that's such a cool thing about Resident Evil. Like, and then like, oh, you've got this puzzle, so you got to hold this key. Uh-oh, the key is where my sniper normally is. Uh-oh.
Well, that's the one thing about this game, doesn't have that type of stuff.
Oh, it doesn't have that.
Which is great. I like that. Oh, man, I don't know.
You don't like the puzzles. To be fair, puzzles are stressful. They were kind of like arbitrarily like just be stressed for a little bit, but like...
Yeah. Well, I mean, the main reason I like this game so much is because Mr. X is not chasing me the whole time, which is very stressful about Resident Evil 2. I didn't like that at all. But I mean, there's some creepy enemies in this too, like big guys that follow you around and, you know, you're in a tight and close quarters and they're hard to kill and stuff like that. They're coming out of body bags and, you know,
there was that one guy that hit you with the shovel you sent me a clip of.
Just the funniest thing, like... There's this one clip, I'm just climbing through a window, like I said earlier, and this guy just comes up and just cranks me in the back of the head with a shovel. But for some reason, the sound effect on it and just the way that Leon like falls to the ground, funniest thing in the world.
You went down like so fast, just bonk.
Funniest thing. The last thing I'll say about this game. Oh, sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say like I'm excited to play this one because I kind of played. Like Biohazard was my first one, and that game is really scary. But I'm really excited to play 4 and kind of get like a little bit more of that like humor aspect.
Yeah, and
like
very action-y
element
too.
As well. Because like Biohazard is like definitely like more in that like securely a horror game. Like you're scared, you're on the edge of your seat. Like you don't want to go around the corner, it's horrible. But like Leon's a cool dude and he's like making quips and like... He doesn't give a fuck. And so he's going to jump out that window. And if he gets hit by a shovel, so be it. Like, that's just Monday.
And then Ada's going to come down. She's on like a grappling hook and she just comes down like Batman. You know, these are kind of fantastical settings. But the last thing I was going to say that I think really makes this game stand out to me more so than some others is it has sort of, I guess because of its age, it has some of that sort of older game design charm to it where there's like those hidden secrets where... if you can shoot like a church bell in one of the settings, and if you shoot the church bell, all the zombies will look up to it because story reasons, and that you'll be like totally safe to walk amongst them. But you just wouldn't know that until later, and there's like some hint about it. And you can like shoot or you can fish for this giant creature in the water or something like that. And if you shoot into the water or something, it comes out and kills you. And like there's no detriment, you just reload, but it's just a cool. Funny thing that developers put in, there's literally no problem with the fish. Like, it's someone just had extra time and programmed that one day or something, you know? I just really love that. It feels like a big head mode or something that just isn't included in games these days. Kind of cool to see.
It's almost like the kind of thing where, like, games are either, like, A, too so streamlined now that they don't have those kind of, like, extra little, like, gamey sort of things. Or they're, like... so committed to having a certain like serious tone that they don't want to put like a few silly things in here or there. But like, you're right. Like that kind of stuff, like it does still show up in games from time to time. And it's always like the most charming thing. Like it's the kind of thing where like someone on this playground would tell you that that's possible. And you'd be like, that's not true. That's not really in the game. And then you'd have to go and test it and it would be there. And,
exactly.
Like,
yeah. And it's so not cool. In like a frustrating way. Like that's what I appreciate about it. I think is that sometimes things can be cryptic for like, but in like a necessary way where you just have no idea how to progress. But these are things which are like additive, which are like fun secrets you can discover, which don't really add anything to your game, but they just are cool and you can impress your friends on the playground, you know, like you say. It's very cool.
You can unlock those sports sunglasses and put them on.
That's right. But yeah, RE4 Remake did another episode on it earlier in the catalog of our content here if you want to listen to more. But it's a great game and you absolutely are. I'm forcing you to play it at some point. It's so good. So good.
Deal. Challenge accepted.
Cool.
I'll put it on my list after Hi-Fi Rush.
I like it. All right. Well, what a great list of games. I think we had some strong contenders this year. I'm excited to see how this next year goes as well, because I mean, it's already February. It's actually March tomorrow. So we have way less time to, I don't know about that. We've played some games
already. Yeah, but I'm counting the games we've already played. Yeah. Like I've played a few games. We're in this unique situation. Yeah. Where normally it's like, we're just looking forward to the year, but I've already played a few games where I'm like, this could be nominated. We're both
in the middle of Persona 3 Reload. That's going to make it. And
yeah, and, I started Lies of P today, and let me tell you, that's on the list already. Like, 2 hours in, it's going on the list.
Yeah, so. I've been playing Helldivers, also a great time.
You enjoyed Marvel Midnight Suns recently?
Midnight Suns might be a character in there, you know, might be good. I mean, Helldivers is easy lead for co-op right now, that's for damn sure. Mm-hmm. But we haven't played Gears 3
yet. Well, unless we play Gears of War 3, so.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to our list. Next episode is another big one for us. It is our predictions episode. So again, usually this is the first episode we do in the start of January, which is where we recap our predictions from the previous year and make our new predictions for this upcoming year. So that's what we'll be doing next episode, along with seeing who won our predictions bet from last year, because I believe whoever won gets to pick a game for the other person to play at some point during the next few months here. That'll be really fun to see how that goes. So look forward to that on the next one. But until next time, this, of course, has been Cloud Control, the podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough. And we'll see you on the next episode.